Hey folks, we are back again live, Tech Ed Europe in Barcelona, in beautiful Barcelona. Have us your questions. This is a kind of an Office 365 programming, but let's just take any kind of questions on Office programmability. I'm Dan Fernandez. Why don't you guys quickly introduce yourselves?
Yep, my name is Brian Jones. I'm a group program manager for a team called the Office Developer Platform Team. So we focus on the Office platform across Office 365, SharePoint, the Office clients, really every way that developers go and extend our experiences.
Okay.
And I'm Steve Lasker. I'm a program manager in our cloud platform tools and work on our data and services space for things like the Office 365 APIs and consuming APIs in general and all your app types.
So what does it mean to have an Office 365 development platform? What is that exactly? Like what are some of the scenarios like that people are building apps for O365?
Yeah, that's great. Like it used to be that the traditional way that you would go and think of being an Office developer was you would just go and write like an add-in or something, right? You would extend.
Right.
Really, the way we think of it is like our first pillar is just extending our experiences. And it makes sense. People spend a ton of their time inside of Office, so third parties naturally want to go and extend that and get their customization kind of in front of users, right?
Right.
The thing that's newer for us, though, and really is most of the news that we're announcing this fall is around the rich set of services that we have in Office 365. Now that we're running Office 365 in the cloud, there's all this rich data in terms of things like calendar, mail, documents, all this rich user data. And so we're exposing a rich set of RESTful services around all of that data. And people can go and connect to that and use that from any app that they're building. So if they're building an iPhone app that has to do with productivity and it deals with how people manage their time, that app can go and connect to Office 365. It can read what that user's calendar is. It knows. It can connect directly to all of that user's data.
So, like, what's a canonical example? Like, is it like the company calendar app, or what's the, like, we see a lot of people building, you know, this kind of app with that data?
Yeah, it's actually a pretty wide set. Like, it's really in its infancy in terms of enterprise level productivity mobile apps. Like most of the investment around mobile apps right now are all consumer-based, right? But you still see this, like if you look at all the apps on phones, there are all these point solutions, right? You have an app for movie times and an app for the weather. We haven't seen that yet in the workplace. Like when you look at how people use devices at work, it's primarily still just like mail and calendar and things like that, right?
Right.
Or general browsing. But we're going to see now this huge wave of these productivity apps that are built for these mobile devices, and there'll be these little point solutions, just like you're seeing in the consumer space. So it's not like the world where productivity was all about these monolithic apps like Word or Excel or Outlook. And we recognize that there's no way we as Microsoft are going to build all of those point apps, right? Mm-hmm. But we do have a rich set of data that those apps can all be backed by. And so you'll see things like basic workflow apps, time management apps, our own internal university recruiting folks, so how we manage all candidates that come through our system at Microsoft and get interviewed,
okay.
Right? So we work with them on building apps that are backed by things like workflow and calendar, documents for resumes and all of that stuff. So it's really exciting. There's a lot of ISVs that we talk to as well as internal devs that get excited about that platform.
So I'm a developer, I want to get started. How do I get started? Like what are the things, because I'm connecting to a cloud service, correct? Does
yeah.
it matter? And because you also mentioned iOS, which is an interesting scenario, where I'm assuming that's a REST service then? Like what's kind of like, if you're a developer, here's how you would build that. What are the pieces that need to fit together?
Yeah, that's great. It's a huge shift that we've had. It used to be when people were going to develop an Office, they really came and sat down and thought, I'm building an Office app. I'm
right.
going to go and read all this documentation. I'm going to start with Visual Studio and get a template or a project that I can use for that. And now with this new model, it's, well, I already have a mobile app I've built. I just want to go and add a new feature that has that app connect to the services. And so it's all
more like, almost like an ingredient to the existing
that's
app,
right.
if you will.
That's right. It's really a shift from us thinking about Office as the platform or the runtime. We're saying, no, the platform and the runtime is really the cloud, right? That's where you go and build your solution. Mm-hmm. You can have that thing running in AWS. You can have it running in Azure. Office is just a rich set of services you can consume from those platforms and some endpoints you can go and extend. And so what we've done, as we said, look, we're going to take a big bet on Azure AD as the source of truth for how an app gets registered in all of the auth, right? So we don't manage auth. Any app, you can just go and register in Azure AD. You go through Azure AD to get your app ID and all of that. And we're just a set of permissions that you can go and request. And as soon as the user goes and grants you those permissions, that's registered in AD. And that's how we then just know that your app can go and access that data.
So when you say permissions, like what does that mean? So like, are we talking calendar, mail,
yeah.
file? Like I'm trying to think of like, okay, I want to, you know, let's use the recruiting application. Maybe have some way to save, you know, the recruiters, they sent me, the candidate has a Word doc or yep. somebody else has a PDF, and I want to be able to share these different file types and upload them maybe in a, you know, sorted or not sorted folders or something like that.
Yeah, so for this first round that we've done, that we just announced yesterday, it's files, mail, calendar, and contacts.
Okay.
So all of those. So basically, those are all scopes in AAD. And so your app can say, I want to read, write files, or I want to just read calendar. When the user goes and launches your app for the first time, they'll then get a consent prompt, right, that says, hey, here's the things that that this app wants access to. But that's just the beginning. We'll continue to go and add more and more capabilities. Like right now, it's files, but we also understand the content of those files. So eventually, we'll say, not only can you get at spreadsheets, but you can get to charts and tables within the spreadsheet, as an example, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah. And we're seeing, like there's a bunch of ISVs that we already have launched with around this. Like, a good example, which isn't even in the mobile space, it's in just the web service space, is If This Then That. So IFT.
I love IFT. This Then That.
So we have channels now in IFT for mail, calendar, files. And so the demo that I showed, actually, there's the IFT app on the iPhone. It lets you, it has a trigger where anytime you take a picture in a certain region, you can log that, right? And so the app that I'm actually using right now that I'm sharing with my team, I have a folder in my OneDrive that's shared with my whole team, and I set up the IFT app so that any picture I take in this area, this conference center, automatically goes into that folder that's shared with my team. And so I automatically get this free conference report, whereas I walk around taking pictures, the IFT thing keeps firing, all those pictures go into my OneDrive that's shared with my entire team.
I want that app.
It's awesome.
Yeah,
like,
cool.
Really, no, I want that app. That's awesome. That's so cool. So the way you did it, is the client Windows phone or iOS device, or I'm not judging. I'm just asking.
No, so, well, it's the IFT channel, right? And so,
but how does it know to, I guess, do the picture listener?
Yeah,
on the phone.
Yeah, so what it does is that one's a specific IF channel for the iPhone that they built. And what it does is it just looks at the metadata on the pictures, looks at the geolocation information. And so if you've ever played around with the IFT app, like, you can go, it's actually really fun. Like, I'm sure you've played around with IFT a bit. Like,
yeah, I do more on the browser version, but it's pretty awesome.
IFT is awesome. Like, you can just geek out on that forever. Zapier is another good example. We actually have some Zapier channels too. Zapier is a lot like IFT, but they focus a little bit more on enterprise type channels.
Okay, I'll have to check out Zapier. I haven't heard of that.
So you want to go play around with. But yeah, so it just looks at geolocation on the pictures, and if the picture happens to be in that region, it'll then go and fire that event. And then the action that you go and take is an Office 365 action, right, which says, take the URL for this picture and upload it to this folder in my OneDrive.
That's awesome. Very cool. Now, Steve, I know you've actually working, and your team works on the connected services experience for this. So, like, I'm a Visual Studio developer. How do I even understand things like Active Directory or scopes that, you know, for... those of us who aren't Vittorio sometimes have a bit of a learning curve on how Active Directory works. Yeah, exactly.
And that's the challenge. I mean, there's all these services that are available, and it's so nice to be able to have Office kind of unlocked for all the things that we want to be able to use in the past. And now I don't have to be an Office app. I can consume Office services. So it just broadens all the possibilities. But the challenge has always been, well, how do I do that? I'm going to have to read a bunch of docs, and, you know, and how do I configure it, and it branches off. You spend more time trying to learn it than you're actually trying to do it. So what we've been doing in the tooling is to make it very easy and self-discoverable. You know, you add a connected service, and it can be any project type. And you will choose Office 365 as the service you want to add. And because we know it's Office 365, we'll ask you the questions that are relevant. You want to do, you know, files, you know, you want to do calendar, contacts, and in each one, you'll be prompted, do you want read-write permissions? And as a result, the service, the configured service, will go out to Azure and configure that for you. And there's no magic to it. We'll just do the same things you would have done yourself, and we will add that to your project. We'll add the configuration in Azure.
So it's actually doing the conversation to Active Directory to set up those scopes?
It'll set up the scopes. Yeah. It'll set up the scopes so you can consume it, and then it'll set up your project that you can consume that service.
Yeah, the tooling team, like, the stuff that they did is awesome. Like, it really, like I said, it flips it around where any app that you're working on in VS, like you're building a Windows 8 app, And then you just decide, wow, I need some place to store this content. Like maybe I'm taking pictures or documents, or it has something to do with time management. You can just right click on that project, say add a connected service. You specify the O365 services you want to consume. And then you're just plugged up, right? They do all the registration and AD. So it's this nice, seamless experience. It's really great.
And the libraries, so now I want to program, you know, maybe do something where it's like, is it just a .NET client library to be able to consume it? Let's say it's mail. So I say like mail M equals new mail, mail.to equals, you know, Steve, and mail.send. Is it that easy?
Yeah, it is actually. The APIs are just REST, right? Like we're just, it's, our main focus is being very standards based, right? We just want to be open,
so it's not a client library then? Well, you're making the HTTP web request calls?
So we do, basically we have, everything is just a REST endpoint, right? But then for different platforms, like even iOS and Android, we have an SDK for iOS, so we have an SDK for Android, and then in Visual Studio, they've gone and done this additional work, so you do have this nice, strongly typed experience where you're going and building against it, right?
So try to match the productivity with what the developer expects.
It's sort of, yeah, it's exactly the right word, like what they'd expect to like walk up. I don't even know the API, but I assume there's probably some methods like that. You can kind of expect that.
Yeah, like for us, like I think that the Visual Studio experience is by far the best. Like when but we have done work. Like so, IntelliJ.
You pay him well. That's good.
Yeah, it is Barcelona.
They provide us a lot, so it's actually weird. Yes, it's great. But you know, we're gonna have support for like IntelliJ, for instance. So if you're an Android developer and that's the IDE love to live in, right? We already have the SDK. We'll go and have some IntelliJ plugins that we'll do to make that easier. And so we're really trying to say, hey, no matter what kind of developer you are, Office 365 is for you. It's a set of services you can go and consume and use.
So and of course, in VS, we have enabling with Xamarin and Cordova, so you can target other devices. So we can do that in Visual Studio. But the whole point here is that you don't have to use those tools. And you could connect to them from other tooling platforms in Eclipse as well, so that you can just get access to these APIs.
Yeah.
And that's just the unlocking that we've done as a company that has just been extremely powerful.
You know, the one thing I was thinking is, in what context does that app run? Because I could imagine like having my mail sender app, if you will, I wouldn't want it to say it was from Dan. I'd want it to say it was from my alert system or something like that. Is that just something that's a configuration when you set up, like build whatever a new account that would be your bogus account and then burn that like into the app kind of thing?
It's actually the way that you described is actually the way you could already do it, right? Where you could more send a mail on just on your own behalf as the developer.
Right.
But one of the things that we have seen that there's a lot of times where you really do want that mail to come from the user's account, right? Mm-hmm. You want for everybody else, like whenever I go and do a share on my phone for an item and I say share through mail, right? That comes from me. It doesn't come from like the app that I did the share from, right? And so the nice thing about these APIs is that you can, as a developer, decide, like, hey, if I want to send this on behalf of the user, as long as they've granted me that permission, I can go and send that mail on behalf of them. And then I just call that mail API.
It's a much more personalized experience. I mean, it doesn't get lost in your junk mail folder. You actually can see who sent it and who the intent was. I can look it up. It was from Brian. It wasn't from some spam bot of some sort. So it's really powerful the way the security.
But is there a way to do the system version of it, or would it just be like build a system account named system?
Bunch of options like that. You could go and create an account, your own account that you send on behalf of.
Okay.
You can go and stand up your own server if you want, right? So there's there's a bunch of options there.
Yeah. Okay.
It's just wondering what's there.
Yeah, exactly. So whichever model you choose, that you have the flexibility.
Yeah. There. Yeah, that's right.
So you mentioned something that was interesting, which is exposing things like graphs and data almost like a service programming. So like this is kind of like phase one. Can you kind of elaborate on what you're thinking? Because that seems really cool and interesting, where I could have my Excel table of, collection of stamps or whatever,
right,
and have that exposed as a service or something.
Yeah, that's right. That's the eventual vision. I mean, imagine being able to go and reference a spreadsheet, and every table in that you could just get back as a JSON object that you could go and program against, right? And
awesome.
So the direction that we're going, a lot of people don't play around with Office 365 across the board and know like all of the things that are in there. But if you think about what Office 365 is made up of, from things like Yammer, Link, even stuff like some of our BI stuff, right? There are a ton of services that over time we'll start to expose through this model. And the great thing from a developer's perspective is it's all just one interface, right? It's not like I have to worry about, oh, what did the Exchange team do and how did they expose their APIs? And then what did the SharePoint team do? It's just, hey, I want to consume Microsoft services. In fact, one of the things that we demoed yesterday that we'll eventually have is there'll just be a single URL you'll go and hit. It'll just be graph.microsoft.com. And right from there, I could say graph.microsoft.com, whack me, whack files, or whack me, whack events, right? And it'll be that one endpoint that I can go and hit to get all the data across the system, rather than having to worry about, oh, what's the SharePoint URL and what's the Exchange server URL.
I actually think you have the hardest part, which is getting a bunch of different teams that are used to having their own APIs to be like, there will be one graph to rule them
yes,
all.
Yes, absolutely.
That's definitely the hardest
part.
That's
why it's like it'll be a staged thing.
Yes,
right?
Yes, slowly but surely. Yeah. You know, you mentioned Yammer. Is there any, or sorry, Link was the other one that it just seems really interesting to think about other ways you can use Link, whether it's like we're now exposing RTC or real-time communication as a service or something like that. Is that thoughts that you all had? Like, hey, how do we democratize? Because real-time communication is a real pain. If I wanted to have just, you know, my Hello World app where the two of us could even video chat or even just text chat.
Yeah.
That's a lot of code that I have to do. I have to build up a server, connections, and then the, you know, if there's busy signals, if you can't communicate, the retry lot, like, you build that as a service. I'm going to build a lot more if this than that.
No, Link has a ton of potential. Like, Link actually has a pretty good platform today. They have a couple different scenarios, just like the rest of Office. There's just like the Link client, people going and extending that. So that's where you kind of get like more like the help desk type of app where you've got an extension in that. But then they also are a service that you can go and call. But then we also have Link and Skype. So one of the big things that we're doing as we're talking to the Link team is how do we just say that there's, again, just this one API that you can go and hit. It's consistent with the rest of the platform. And so that's one where the Link team is just now starting to really look at that in depth. But there's a ton of potential there.
Yeah, so remember, we are taking questions, and Al asks, are you working on improving the story for service accounts? I do want to send a message from a bot, but authenticating that is a hassle since I had to do browser automation, HTML parsing to get the login to work. Just having the portal and not require JavaScript would be a step in the right direction.
I'm trying to parse the question.
Are you working on improving the story for service accounts? I think that's, if you answer that one, I think the other ones will.
We're not specifically. I mean, like any account that, the thing that we're exposing through these APIs are just accounts that are in the O365 system. So any account, you can go and get a scope to access that account's mailbox, right? And then once you're granted access, you'll have access to that. Okay. We're not going beyond that, like setting up a new kind of bot style. Like, I mean, as you mentioned, that people have different ways they could go and do that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You basically build, and people do that kind of thing to system accounts, if you will.
Right, right.
That are nothing more.
But we've also seen, like, especially like in the workflow space, sometimes those system account mails end up not having enough context, and they're just kind of confusing to folks, like, who is this thing that just emailed me, as opposed to when it doesn't really come from somebody that you know. And so there's a lot of times where in those workflow scenarios, really what you want to do is you want to send the mail on behalf of the person that triggered that, right? And so it's nice to have those choices.
You know, you mentioned Link, the client, having extensibility, and Skype had its Skype Com, but I think that's going away. Can you talk to some of the things on the Skype extensibility, or is that not your?
Yeah, no, that's the key thing I was saying around both Link and Skype, is that right now the team is going through the planning for what are the services they want to go and expose, and how do they fit into this model. So it's just kind of like if you remember back in the day in Office when we first rolled out the ribbon, the new UI, we started with a core set of apps, and then it started to make its way out throughout the rest of the system, right? It's that same way with this model. So we've picked the core workloads that people are targeting, so file, mail, calendar, context. That's just kind of the bread and butter of Office. Mm-hmm. And so those are the ones that we started with. And then around client extensibility, we focused on Word, Excel, Outlook, and PowerPoint. And now the rest of the other teams, we're starting to work with those teams on how do we now bring you into the fold of this model. But like you said, it's a lot of work to go and coordinate across all those teams, but try and still have one consistent model, right?
Steve's laughing. I don't know if he's sandbox. He's crying on the inside, too. I don't know if people can see. Yeah, but yeah, that is a noble effort, for sure. You know, you talked about the other part, which is not even just the services, but client extensibility. Are there other innovations going on in sort of the client extensibility for, you know, I am using Excel and now I can use different ways to get at data? Like yeah. just for, because there's such a large base of people using things
huge
like macros.
Set. Yeah. So we have a huge amount of people that have already invested in like VBA and COM add-ins. And those are going to continue to work in the traditional Excel on Windows application, right?
Right.
But you may have noticed that we're starting to run on other platforms too, right? Like we have Excel on the iPad, for instance.
Will I be able to do VBA on iPad? Is
no.
this what you're declaring right now?
No, this is quite the opposite.
Oh, okay. Well, now it's awkward.
Yes. No, but actually, so with 2013, we introduced a new extensibility model for the clients. It's all HTML and JavaScript based. Mm-hmm. We just, like what we refer to that as apps for office is the term, the public term that we use for it. And really what it means is you can go and extend the Excel or the Outlook experiences, but you're just using HTML and JavaScript to do that. There's a JavaScript API that is available to you, so Excel exposes that API. So you can think of it almost like you have your own web page that's running right there inside of Excel. You can interact with the grid, you can push data in, pull data out. And so we're seeing people building those like data pipe apps and whatnot, right?
Right.
The reason that we picked HTML and JavaScript is because that is cross-platform though, right?
Mm, okay.
And so, for instance, those apps already work in Excel for Windows as well as the Excel Online, which is the HTML client of Excel.
Right.
And one of the things that I showed yesterday was a sneak peek of those apps, those solutions running in Excel on the iPad. And so that's a thing that we'll have coming in the next few months.
That'll be very cool.
Yeah, so we picked this model as a way that we can say this will work everywhere that Office runs.
I mean, you think about it, in some ways JavaScript is becoming the modern VBA.
Yes, it
is. And that's the challenge, is to think about it. Yes, there was an old way to do it when the world was all very much Windows, and that's where all these apps ran. But now that they're running on all different platforms, that JavaScript is a way to do that.
Yeah, we really focus on the two sides. One is the services you can go and consume, and then the other one is just extending our experiences.
Right.
So there's running across all those platforms. Another key one that we did a lot of work on in conjunction with the Azure Active Directory team is O365 itself is an experience you can extend. And so one of the other things we announced is that when you go to Office 365 now, you can have third-party apps show up at the top level right alongside all the other workloads in Office 365.
So what does that mean exactly for folks kind of not, again,
yeah,
not
for folks that aren't really familiar with Office 365 yet. So Office 365 is a portal, essentially, you go and log into. And we've had UI there where you can go and say, I want to access my mail, or I want to access my calendar, or my OneDrive. I want to launch Word online or PowerPoint online. All of the different experiences we have in Office, you can go and get to through Office 365. So it's kind of that one spot that you can go. And we introduced a brand new UI. We blogged about it. Most people don't have it yet, but it'll start rolling out next month. That's an app switcher that essentially lets you go and quickly go and navigate between all of those first-party experiences that we have.
Right.
But the other thing we're going to do is we're going to allow third parties to go and have their apps show up there. And so anybody that has their app registered in Azure AD, if the user goes in and grants access to that app, that will show up right there in their app switcher. So,
is there like an example or partners that you're working
with? Yeah, there's a bunch of partners we've done for that already. So Smartsheet, they're actually based out of Bellevue. They do, think of it like a hybrid between Project and Excel.
Okay.
It's I want to do project management, but I really love the idea of living in a grid. And so they're a web-based app, they're a cloud-based app. And Smartsheet now, if you go and acquire Smartsheet and log in with Office 365, then Smartsheet will just show up there in the Office 365 UI right alongside like Word, PowerPoint, and your mail and calendar.
Oh, cool. I'll have to play. So we do have some questions here. James Thompson asks, what is the timeline for the iOS client SDK in Swift? Is it a matter of weeks or months? Can you comment on delivery timetables for Swift SDK?
No.
Next question.
Yeah. For the
I tried.
I will. I'll answer a different question since it said the iOS client SDK. So the
sure.
iOS client SDK for the Office services is just up in GitHub, and so anybody can go and get it at. So
now I'm assuming because it's GitHub, then therefore it's open source.
Yep.
Open source friendly license.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep. So we both the Android SDK and the iOS SDK are just up in GitHub. They're completely open source. The Android SDK has been up there for quite a while, and we've seen a lot of activity. The iOS one is just now launching. That's part of the announce this week. Most of the things like that, we are just going to go and put up in GitHub, right? Like, we want to do everything we can to make it as easy as possible to connect to our services.
Now, just for giving feedback, are you all using the issue tracker in GitHub? So therefore, that person could actually go in there and say, hey, I want the iOS SDK to support Swift, and then other people can raid and comment.
Yeah,
and
absolutely. We have a bunch of different mechanisms we're using to get feedback. So our team is really active through user voice. So we have a user voice feedback mechanism that we go and look at frequently. In fact, I was telling the group yesterday, about once a month, we sit down and review all the user voice feedback that's come in. And we use that to prioritize our backlog.
Awesome.
It's a much different model now in Office. Like, we're shipping all the time, right? It's not like we ship once every 3 years, and so we do 6 months of planning, then we just go, right? We're constantly shipping. And so as a result, we're constantly reevaluating our backlog, and we use things like user voice to help us do that prioritization. We're also active in Stack Overflow, and then we look at the projects in GitHub and see what are the things that people are requesting there, too.
Very cool, very cool. Matt asks, is there going to be future tooling for editing the JSON manifest in Azure Active Directory? This seems like a very error-prone process. Do you want to talk about future tooling?
Future tooling. It's always the future. That was part of what we talked about earlier, right, is how much of this stuff do I have to know by memory, you know, and all the different places to configure things. And, you know, JSON is the latest, you know, angle brackets to curly brackets configuration of stuff that, you know, we're working on IntelliSense in places. But through the tooling, we want to be able to configure that. You know, we want it to be in a text format, so it's easily checked in and shared and readable. But it's also the place for our tooling to work over. So that is definitely something we want to spend time on and doing.
Yeah.
So I think that is a yes, the long and short of it. So thinking back to some of the other cool services, what is the, is it Delve?
Delve, yes.
Delve
that's
as
a great one.
As a service? Can you kind of talk about that? And how do you all kind of do the prioritization as well in terms of, like, what services? Because you can imagine, like, really kind of plugging this with machine learning and getting out some really interesting data on, like, what is the pulse of, let's just say, Microsoft. What are Microsofties, like, reading or doing this week? Like, I think of, like, Twitter trends for the enterprise.
Yeah, so Delve is a great one.
And maybe explain it
let
to
me just,
for folks.
Yeah, I'll describe Delve really quick. Delve, it was a project we initially codenamed Oslo, which was kind of been out, and Delve was the final name. What Delve is it gives you inference and insights into essentially all the data that's in Office. So we're able to see things like who's opening what documents, who's viewing what documents, what meetings are people able to go to, and we can start to draw inferences between those. So if I click on you, I'll see what are the documents that are related to you, right? So what are the ones that you've been reading? And we obviously have to be very careful in terms of, like, PII, right, not giving away personal information. But the whole point of that is
why does he keep looking at his resume? That
yes, exactly.
Why is that terribly awkward.
Document? Yeah, why is he reading my specs?
And so we don't usually say, like, what is the reason that this document is being suggested, right? But it ends up being really cool. Like, I can go and click on my boss all the time, and I can see, oh, what are the things that are going on? It's really neat, like, how many things you end up discovering and reading about. But
what's
it's more
on
than
top
just
of his mind.
And, yeah. You know, and in fact, I've gotten to the point where now, rather than internally blogging, sometimes I find I can just write a document up, like some thoughts, just put it in my OneDrive, and people on my team and other team people I work with just discover that document because it'll go and recommend that document to other people that I email frequently. We're able to see, like, who are the people that work together a lot. Okay, let me go and suggest documents to you because you do similar things to what this person does. Even things like meetings. Like, one of the scenarios that we've talked about is getting to the point where if we're all in a meeting together and one of us has PowerPoint up and it goes into presentation mode, well, now the system can infer what was the presentation that was presented in that meeting. So if I go back and reference that meeting a month from now, I can quickly see, oh, what was the PowerPoint presentation that someone went and presented there?
Mm-hmm.
And so the experience around Delve is this nice, rich experience of going and seeing all of this different information. And then from a developer's perspective, there's really two things you look at. One is, can I as a developer just consume that? Can I go and also see that graph of information? Is there an API around that?
Right.
It
so will like definitely you give me a customer or, I guess, employee ID, and I could find out all the docs related to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, what are the documents? They're
traverse
trending.
The graph and
right.
all that stuff.
And in fact, we'll eventually have that. So how I was saying, we have graph.microsoft.com/me/files. Those would just be the files of my OneDrive, but we'll also eventually be able to do things like /me/trending. Like, what are the objects that are trending around that person? So those would be really
very
great.
Cool.
But you know, a lot of the ISVs that we talk to, they're more interested in getting their information into the graph. And so we'll also have APIs around sending signals into the graph. So if I'm SAP or even Salesforce, let's say I'm Salesforce and my users all work on opportunities, can I go and inject opportunities into the graph? And so when I go and click on you in the Delve experience, not only will I see the documents you've been working on, but I could also maybe see the opportunities that you're a part of.
So I could understand like attaching it as part of something that exists, but couldn't you imagine like every enterprise going like, hey, come back to my system, because they, you know, everybody realizes you set up some CRM and then nobody downloads the heavyweight client, and now it's just going to spam the internal Dell system.
And that's just where we have to, like, one of the big pieces of work that's going on with all of that is just that the proper inference, right? Being smart, not going and just showing junk to people, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing when you look at things like Yammer, right? Where Yammer can get super noisy at times, and so the Yammer team has to go focus on how do we make sure that we're really showing the relevant information to people. And so that's part of Delve, is saying, hey, once we do allow people to, third parties, to inject signals into the graph, we have to make sure that we're actually going and filtering those properly so it really is the most relevant set of stuff. So if there's a thing that gets inserted in the graph, but no users actually clicking on it or finding it useful, that's kind of a good indication that that's actually not that relevant.
It's just noise, yeah. You know, you mentioned Yammer, and what's surprising is a lot of people don't know what Yammer is, and obviously we use it. Can you kind of explain what Yammer is, and then maybe what are the developer scenarios for Yammer?
Yeah, so Yammer is essentially it's enterprise social, right? And so think of the same way you use Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's for within your enterprise. And so our team uses Yammer quite a bit, right? So for instance, for this report, this conference, I've been posting to Yammer pretty frequently, just so that the rest of the team back home is able to follow along with what's going on. People can go and give thumbs ups to stuff. People can go and reply. So it's just a nice place to go and have those discussions around different things that are going on. So whether or not you have a project, a conference that you're going to. And so it's enterprise social. And
the thing about, we come to these conferences and we do these demos, and we're right up to the hairy edge of just trying to get the code working to do a demo. And the team is back in Redmond, or you know, wherever the development team is at that point, and how did it go?
Yeah, they're on pins and needles wondering, did it work?
Yeah.
Did the demo crash, right?
Know, do we put a trip report, you know, weeks later, or do we just, here's what's happened today, and you know,
it's a great point. Like, I was actually down at the Salesforce conference 2 weeks ago, and it used to be that you'd go to these things, and then you'd write up the trip report, and it was always delayed, because you'd have other things you're doing, and so you'd write up that doc, and you keep iterating on it, and it goes out a few weeks later.
I feel like you're predicting my future right now.
Yes.
It's so weird.
And with Yammer instead, so when I was down at Dreamforce, I would just constantly, I have the Yammer mobile app, and so every time I'd see something I thought was interesting, I would just go take a picture of it, write up a quick note, post that, and then the team gets that right away, and then the team starts having conversations around it, like, oh, that's really cool, look what they're doing with the Salesforce One mobile app. We should think about things like that, right?
Or real-time ask questions, you know, like, hey, we've been thinking about this, I saw you were talking with some customers about this, can you tell me what kind of auth challenges they're having?
Yeah.
So it's not just a one-way push, it actually becomes a really nice asynchronous communication.
We actually use Yammer even to get customer feedback. So we have Yammer channels that we've set up where people can go and have just conversations with the engineering team. Like, hey, I'd really love to see this API. They just go and post it to the Yammer, and then the team sees that right away and can have that nice, rich discussion about that right there. If you haven't played around with Yammer, you should definitely try it out.
Yeah, so from a developer's perspective, how do I, like, use Yammer? Like, what would be the API? Is it like to post to a wall, or what are some of the scenarios that like people are extending Yammer today?
Yeah, one of the ones that's the most straightforward is just essentially using OpenGraph, right? And so it's just like Facebook. I've got my own app that I want to inject content into the Yammer feed, right?
Okay.
And so that's one of the things that we see a lot of people doing. The other one that we're going to go and look at a lot more is the idea of Yammer as a control or experience I can embed within my app. So if I've got my app that people go to frequently, but I want to be able to have people have a social discussion around things that are inside of my app, I should be able to go and have Yammer as a thing I could embed right there, right? So that people can go and have conversations about whatever that object is that's in my app. So like in the university recruiting one that we were talking about at the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. You can imagine using Yammer as a way of having discussions around the candidates that are coming through or the overall process, right? And so having that embedded right there inside of the university recruiting app.
Okay. Probably the other area that's been getting a lot of interest is big data. And like, okay, how are we going to be able to use this? And there's tools like, Excel has always had things like Power Pivot and so on. How's that kind of play into the programmability angle? Because everybody's saying, hey, all these devices are going to be sending us data. We're going to have all this stuff. We had Seth Juarez and Steve Teixeira on earlier talking about some of these IoT scenarios. Yeah. What does it mean for office developers from a programmability perspective?
Yeah, so around just the big data in general, there's a big partnership between Office and the SQL team. And so there's a product called Power BI that is actually just an app that's part of Office 365 that you can get. And that allows you to, it's like a nice marriage of SQL and Excel, where Excel is that front end that I can go and interact with to build up those dashboards, uses SQL on the back end for all the heavy processing. It's really like just we've continued that momentum around, you were mentioning like Power Pivot, and then there was Power Query. There's a bunch of things we've done to make it a lot easier to work with just big sets of data.
And Power BI is the latest one?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm hearing from our compatriots that we need to stop. So this was yeah, exactly. Brian, Steve, this was awesome. Quick plug your session and Twitter accounts.
Twitter is Jones206, and my session was yesterday.
Okay, so they can watch it live. Yep. It'll be on 24 hours afterwards. So and what was the name of it?
Chris, do you remember the name of it? No. I don't remember. I think it was what's new in Office 365 development or something like that. It was
look
the
for Office and developer.
Kickoff. It had a kickoff in it.
Okay.
And I've got a session on Friday morning at 8:30 on Office Cloud Business Apps, I think it's titled. So, and my handle is at Steve Lasker.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you both and really appreciate it. And coming up next, we'll be talking about C# with Kevin.
Thanks.
Right. Thanks.
Thanks.